Okay, Bulge in the Batarang in the fire truck, which is called Full of Big Sexy, I believe.
The fully loaded fire truck of sexy. Yes, sir.
You're listening to an original podcast series, Heart of the Storm, proudly brought to you by Braidwood FM.
We're planning to use Batarang Road as a containment line.
When residents of Mongalo were left with very little resources to protect their village and surrounds, new leaders emerged.
I've got to say, Paul Bott, he's just all over it. Like, he's got so much pressure on him, and he's just, like, organising everyone so well.
I don't want to scare anyone.
The fire is just there, and if it jumps the highway, bloody hell will break loose.
Everyone's all in, you know.
That's affirmative.
We were keeping track of everybody's movements, keeping track of where people were, what people were doing, what people were planning.
It is uplifting going to the fire shed. They are a team and they're for us. Love them all.
It felt like there was so much support and we were going to win.
Lisa Honey, she's amazing. She's everywhere.
Lisa Honey.
Her husband Adam Honey, like, he could roll through the fire and put it out himself, I think.
Here we are, Warabucca, still standing.
Profiles in courage here in Braidwood.
It's just unending, the amount of courage shown by everybody.
And the community was galvanised. This is their story.
Testing, testing.
What, Jerry?
My name's Paul Bott. Amongst other things, I'm the captain of the Mongalo Fire Brigade.
I'm Di Bott. We've been here for 20 years, both moved up from Sorrento. When we were living in Sorrento, we had a jewellery gallery. Our accountant said, "What's your dream?" We said, "We want to live in the country." We're very lucky to have the same dream. We found Braidwood and we found this place.
The reason we're here is because we love the environment. We just get into the whole shebang here that Mongalo's got to offer.
So we call this the three gates of separation to the outside world.
Now, should I read that poem?
The river is quite special.
This is a poem by Judith Wright titled The Ancestors. That stream ran through the sunny grass, so clear.
There is something about the Mongalo River.
All one lilt of life.
One of the most pristine rivers I've ever seen.
So it starts up in Monga and it flows through all the land.
Like, Dad got the water tested and it was pure enough to put in a battery in your car, you know, so very special.
From the top of the hill there you can see the coast. So you get all the coastal mist coming over. You can see it just rolling down through the trees.
A lot of beautiful people come here.
My name's Adam Honey. Yeah, Lisa's my loving wife, unofficial wife.
You're the glue that sticks it all together, I think. Yeah. Helps things flow.
Yeah.
We found our way up to the source, where stand the fern trees locked in endless age.
My name's Murray McCracken, and I've been living here for years and years and years and years.
My name is Reg Webb, and I've lived in this area all my life.
My name's William. I'm a jeweller. We moved here, I opened up above number one, and then I ran into Paul Bott. And he said, "Well, I'm a jeweller too." And I went, "Oh, fuck."
I'm Nicole, and I live right across from the fire shed. I spend my time teaching the violin and the piano.
My name's Ned, Ned Bott. I joined the fire brigade when I was 16. I like to think it was just a small sense of duty.
My name's Stuart Cadden.
I call Stu my best mate.
For a job, teach people about high threat environments and also go into high threat environments.
We've been through a lot and we've never let each other down.
Constantly looking and planning on worst case scenarios.
Holly and I say, "It's all right, we've got a stew."
I'm a permanent firefighter with Fire Rescue New South Wales.
You are a chap.
I'm a big believer in life sort of pushes you where to go.
That's fantastic. You have a Merry Christmas. When we walked down the first time for the Christmas party, I was hiding behind Paul because there was all these people and they know you're new, you know, all eyes come at you and it's like, beep. And they were so welcoming and lovely. And I've never been in a community and so it was lovely, really lovely experience.
Well, when we first got here, we were made aware that there was a local brigade. So you'd wander down and introduce yourself as the, you know, new kid on the block sort of thing.
We joined the Landcare group and Friends of Mongalo River. And we were both deeply involved with those and it was fun.
And I'd always liked the idea of joining a fire brigade. I had a bit of fire experience down in Victoria. And when I got up here, I had the time and the opportunity to join the local brigade. And I thought it'd be a great way just to meet the locals. It was just on a bit of a low ebb, the brigade, and just there was a couple of us there and we just sort of brought new energy. And then that led down the track to me having the captaincy thrown on me. They'd lost these local folk prior to me joining, and I was quite surprised. How come Phil isn't it? How come Reg isn't it? And they got pissed off and left. And I said, oh, why to get pissed off?
As time went on, there seemed to be so much red tape attached to the RFS.
They were told they had to do training to run a water pump, you know, and things like that. And then it's going, well, fuck, we do it all the time, you know.
Yes, that's right. Have lessons on how to drive a truck. And
but all been done since we were kids.
Been driving a truck since I was about 12.
And so one of the things I did when I was first captain is I went and visited all these locals and said, I'm the new captain, I'd like to learn, what can you tell me? You know where the tracks are, you know where the dams are.
Just talking to him for 5 minutes, you get a good feeling about people. Within that 5 minutes, I thought, oh, he's an enthusiastic young fellow and he'll be all right. When there's a fire and you want me, I'll be here.
And that was a really constructive thing because they said, look, shit hits the fan, we'll be there, no sweat.
Yes, well, it certainly did hit the fan in a big way.
I guess there was a bit of a sense of foreboding for that particular summer. It's because it started so, like, almost in the middle of winter.
We knew it was coming. You could see it coming down New South Wales. We were watching the fires from August, September up north. I'd religiously watch the ABC weather to see the stories that were starting to come out. And I think it was Di who just said, it's coming. It's coming down.
Well, we had the perfect storm as far as fire's concerned. Driest has been here for 100 years. And as far as springs and water along the mountain here in creeks and that, the last time it was that dry was 1890.
The river stopped flowing on the 12th of November 2019.
About 125 fires are burning across New South Wales as crews in some areas brace for the return of hot and windy conditions.
So today is the 3rd of December 2019. It is so dry with no rain in sight.
A lot of firefighters are already pretty weary, and now we're starting to get fires. They're not as bad as what we've seen up in the north yet.
Braidwood's running out of water. We are in for the long haul.
On the New South Wales south coast, nearby coastal towns are under threat from the Carrolwyn bushfire with high temperatures and strong northwesterlies.
If it was a westerly, the Black Range was coming. If it was an easterly, that was a Carrolwyn fire coming.
So we did send crews to the North Black Range fire all the time with our eyes east to the Carrolwyn fire, which was, you know, getting bigger and bigger and bigger over the hill.
I ended up at the fire shed because Phil was doing the night shifts at the Black Range. And we live in a little 6x4 cabin, so he'd come home and need to sleep, so I needed to be out of the cabin. So I wandered up to the shed. I'd just start answering the phones, and we'd have people coming in, and we'd start pulling out maps and charting things. And so I just started sticking maps up on the wall and joining maps together.
You know, ever since I was part of the fire brigade, I'd promised my parents that if we were ever in danger, I'd be back from wherever, whatever I was doing, I'd drop it and help out. Paul himself had just been informed that we're not getting any extra resources. This fire was coming up and over the mountains, and a 6 kilometre front coming uphill in these catastrophic days. And the next morning I was on a flight back with a small backpack of maybe some clothes and a laptop, and left everything else in Berlin. I flew into Sydney while the fires were burning in Blue Mountains, so we just arrived in smoke.
Mongalo Fire Shed, Wednesday, 4th of December. Very busy.
Today is the 4th of December 2019. There's a community meeting at 4 p.m.
I thought it was a Christmas party.
Yeah. With Paul informing the community. Fire will come over the top probably tonight.
So you know there's Carrolwyn Creek fire behind the range here. Yep, all aware of that.
The word was put out and everybody was there.
Shed was full, even outside was full.
People standing outside, really crowded.
So what we're doing is we're cutting a fire break from the King's Highway. We're going to cut it all the way to Wagwag.
There was one thing that I think really gripped everyone at the start of that meeting. He mentioned to everybody what they need. And it was a severe circumstance. Like, if you don't have 20, 30, 40, 60,000 litres and a fire pump and a fire plan at home and a bunker, don't be at home.
So, as the blackboard down the village says, be vigilant. Get all your fire plans into action and stick to them?
I knew the situation before that meeting, that I could scream black and blue to Firecom, I'm not going to get anything.
Will we have support from you?
I've been asking for it all the time.
We didn't have the numbers to dedicate assets to when everything was so thin on the ground.
Oh, fuck. We're going to have trouble.
And basically, Paul said, the resources are low at the moment because they're everywhere else, so we're on our own.
There was no one coming.
He started crying.
Paul had to stop and he stood behind the whiteboard because he was actually crying.
He just had to have a moment.
Well, you can see that was probably the hardest, one of the hardest things he's ever had to do is tell his community that he can't get any help.
And this gripped everyone. You could see it. There was dead silence.
Absolute silence.
Just silence. Like, we were just taking in everything Paul said.
Speechless. And everyone just waiting for Paul to be able to speak again.
I just felt for Paul having to break that to everybody.
He felt responsible for them.
I think that was just the realisation for everyone. We were pretty much just in shock. People were crying.
It's pretty sad.
People were angry.
And so we knew the truth of the gravity of the situation.
It was like a reality check.
There's this huge looming fire that we could all see on the ranges. I think we all just thought, okay, well, here we are. Yeah, got to do what we can.
Everyone was going to have to step up.
This is where the community really started to kick in now.
I had a 2,000 litre tank, I had a truck at the time, pump. So Stu and I just said, righto, that's it, we're going to go and pick a fight with the fire.
We'll meet you at the fiery shed.
Yeah. Bodge gave us a ring and said, oh, do you want to come out with us?
But he's in, he's up for it.
I said, yeah, for sure.
People are hurting, he wants to help them, you know.
We got in discussion with Bodge about it. Just with a bit of
coordination
and a bit of structure, we could actually make a really good firefighting resource.
Can we just go around, say who we are? That might be a nice team building exercise.
Yeah, we had heaps of friends as well as friends of friends.
G'day guys, I'm Freddie. Yeah, just down to give a hand.
I'm Mitch.
I'm staying with Bulge and Holly.
Here I am to help.
I'm Nathan. I'm down at Bandura.
I'll be listening in on the app.
Hey, John Redburn from Butterwong, looking after each other and everyone.
I started organising more and more people with tanks and pretty much everyone along here, they all had their own ute with a pod on it.
So many different walks of life.
Yeah.
Came in to be a mozzie. Pretty impressive.
I'm Ben Gleeson. It's really good to have the opportunity to help out. We're all lucky to be here, I reckon, and being able to do something.
We became a branch where we had a HQ element being Adam Honey, who would go in, get briefed, and then he would back brief the rest of the people.
I'm Paul. I'm Hugh and Rena's son.
I am the daughter of Adam.
I've been here for 14 days now. You'll see me in the battle truck.
And it just got so big that we had to actually move from just under the veranda here over to the shed.
So all of a sudden we had a little army.
We've just received a whole bunch of 000 calls for the western end of the Currawang fire.
Yes.
Obviously it has come over the range and is now highly visible from the Mongalo, North Angra, Charlie's Forest area.
Yes, indeed.
Still burning in the forest, so it's not actually anything we can do anything about just at the moment. The people running the fire down in Shoalhaven are also well aware of the situation.
And we thought, well, best way to fight fire is with fire. We knew containment line strategy had the potential to work.
The plan was really quite simple and, I guess at the end of the day, fairly ingenious. Just get a bulldozer or two and put a whopping great line along the base of the hills.
I know that the local brigade captain is sitting out there at the moment.
So we've then set about containment lines burning in from them.
He's been telling us that there's a dozer trail that is three blade widths wide all the way along that western edge and into the open country there.
In an attempt to steer, we were the steering committee. Can't stop it. We wanted us to go around Mongalo.
Look, I'm still waiting to hear from RFS Shoalhaven to get their first update, but I've got the next best thing. We've got a new roving reporter for Braidwood FM, and I have on the line Bulge in Butterwang, who is in the fully loaded fire truck of Sexy. Now, I kid you not, people. So, Bulge in Butterwang, can you actually just tell us where exactly you are out there?
Yes, mate, I'm right at the end of Myrtle Grove, just looking around. I've got a nice vantage point. I've been cruising around with the mosquitoes, trying to keep up with the RFS guys. Man, they're good, far out.
We had controlled our edge. We'd backburned all the way along. And then across Fagans Creek had been burnt, and then all the way down the road and up to the Butterwang had been burnt. So we actually had a contained edge. We were assuming it was nearly blacked out, right? But somewhere along the line it jumped, and so it was free and we had an uncontained fire.
We were sitting in the shed getting briefed for the day when one of the locals pulls up in a car and says, "I need two fit young men, stat." There was only two people that fit that description in the building at the time, so we just got up, grabbed these backpacks to fill up with water, and we get ourselves to this spot fire, and it's starting to take off. I'd noticed that there was a paddock in front of us that was burning a little bit, so I started putting it out, and then my crewmate comes up to me, whacks me on the shoulder, goes, "Not that, what are you doing? That!" And I look at the inferno, I'm like, "You want us to get that?"
We go, "Shit, if we don't catch this now, we're going to be buggered. We'll be in the village before you know it." I called everybody who was around. I said, "Right, Bull's Place, go."
When he rang, we were right there back at Bull's Place, but we couldn't see the fire. So we're like, "No, there's no fire here, man. No, no." Paul has this ability to say the funny tree on the left with the right-handed leaning tower of pizza. Boom, there's this fire.
Which is bad because this is coming in towards Mongolo Township and can easily rip through those paddocks and be in the township and destroying houses.
Stu's got his hose, off he goes.
I could see a downed tree, very dry leaves, and I'm like, if it hits this tree, we're not going to be able to stop it. It's gone. And my hose pulls up like a good 20 metres short.
Where I'd parked the truck is cow pats. They catch on fire like you wouldn't believe. So under the truck was on fire.
And so I'm screaming at Bulge over the radio, "Get the fucking truck up here, mate." And Bulge is like, I'm trying, mate. The truck's just on fire, so I'm putting that out.
He gets the rake and he starts making this fire break. But on top of him, above him, there's fire everywhere.
Jumped through the fence and just started putting this fire out on the edge, and it just started growing and growing and growing out into the forest. It was huge.
Ran into the bush and started furiously digging some form of scrape. I had to get in under that fallen tree with all the leaves on it. I could feel the heat. I was starting to sweat. I kept looking above myself.
You just hear a thump. These trees were falling.
I thought, okay, I can either do this scrape and possibly get burnt or just let it burn. I figured if I was going to get burnt, this would be a worthwhile sacrifice.
We just went in one roll after the next. So we had to roll out a hose, connect it up and go another hose length in, and our little Cat 7 starting to run out of water.
I could feel the temperature rising. I thought, this could be it.
We hear over the radio that the water truck's coming. Like, great.
It's just about to go right. Like, I can't take this anymore.
So the water truck's filling up the Cat 7 at the same time I'm pumping it out the other end.
And then I felt like almost like rain on me. I thought it was some sort of miracle. But then a gust of water came through and I looked over to where it was coming from and I could see two gangly looking RFS members at the full extension of their hose just spraying it on towards me.
Put out this tree that's burning and from behind it pops this head of one of the mosquitoes with a rake hoe.
I pulled down my mask and I said, "It's Stuart." And he goes, "Ah, bro, it's me, Ned."
And it was great to meet him in the middle.
"Man, you just saved my life."
And then the boys would come back, so I'd make sure they had what they needed, fed them.
It's settled down considerably. The spot fire that was Buttering Road and Myrtle Grove Road still continuing to be mopped up.
The phone calls started coming in and I was trying to interpret all this fire talk and be able to convey that to people who were ringing up from the community. It grew from one map on the whiteboard to, I think we had six maps all conjoined. I was here doing it myself all day and well into the night. I would sleep, but I wouldn't sleep a lot. Day after day after day, it really built up and I was getting to a point where mentally and emotionally I was just shattered.
She was falling apart and all of a sudden that's when the sirens got together.
And he came in.
And he just walked in.
And he happened.
Right, we can do a loss during three shifts.
I mean, I'm bossy, but Hanny's bossy. All her organisation skills, she's like, okay, I've got this, I've got this.
The tables and chairs and eskies and fridges.
Bam, bam, bam.
Then more and more people started turning up.
They sent me home for a couple of days and when I came back it was like this amazingly well-oiled machine.
And so I came down to the shed as a safe haven, really.
Would you like me to run down
there? Was a need. I saw a need, and so we, between us, we tried to fill that need.
Someone mentioned we were luring people into the shed, and I was like, yeah, we're the sirens.
With
food and everything, so we just began the Mongolo fire sirens.
Luring people and caring for them.
Yeah, well, yeah, in a good way.
But yeah, the Mongolo circle strengthened like you wouldn't believe.
And it's incredible just how quickly it grew.
Yes, for safety and for company and knowledge, for knowing what was actually happening, because the only source really was the Braidwood radio.
Now,
the fires moved beyond those containment lines that those remote area firefighters were endeavouring to strengthen the last few days, and is sort of moving in that northwest-westerly area. There is a number of containment lines that have been put in there, and of course, North Angra being the last one, unfortunately. Planning and ops are sort of looking at how best to contain that, and it may be as it moves off the mountain into cleared land.
We're down there, we cut a containment line, and it all went quiet. All of a sudden, black leaves, debris, was falling out of the sky and landing. So I said, right, go check it. And we go and feel it. Cold. Oh, that's interesting. Shit. Something's come. So we only had three trucks. And you radio in saying, we are getting debris. It is cold. It got dark. And then you could see the red embers coming. 1,000 feet in the sky. And you go, oh, shit. And then as each one lands, it ignites. Boom, 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 boom. Just like that. Off she goes, off, you know. And then the wind comes behind it. So the wind's pushing the embers in front.
The sea breeze came in and just the fire just exploded. We had no chance of stopping it, just blew up.
It was jumping containment lines, jumping the King's Highway, heading to North Angra Road.
North Angra down below, where our family farm. And I thought, shit, I'll have to get down there and see what the cattle are doing. By the time I got down there, there would have been 50 fires.
Just going, far root, you know. Just all hell's breaking loose. And the best thing you do is bring in the water trucks, and if it's on fire, put it out. So put out. By the time you realise what time it was, like it's 2 a.m, the King's Highway's a light, top to bottom, on the side of the road, just going, oh shit. You know, if we don't get this out by tomorrow, we're toast. So you get under fire control. We need lots of trucks. We need 3 strike teams. We need more dozers. So we're still Shoalhaven control. They're saying, well, we're busy. I said, I appreciate that, but there's nothing between us and Braver. We got 50 houses in trouble. I said, what have you got? And they couldn't guarantee anything. And I said, well, just send us a roast duck. If you can't send us gear, send me a roast duck. Anything else is useless, you know. About half an hour later, I have a national park vehicle rock up, and they were there to take me away. They could hear the fatigue. Fuck, you know, this guy wants a roast duck. What do we do?
So they sent him home.
So they came along to pick me up. They physically take me from the vehicle and put him in their vehicle and take me home. And then the only other person on the fire ground is Phil Schumacher. I turned to Phil. I said, mate, I've got to go. I'm asleep on my feet. I've got to take the Mongolo trucks. You're the only one left. And he said, don't worry. Leave with me. I'll be right.
Yeah.
Out of ute, a bit of water.
Hey, 400 litres, and I kept filling out of the water troughs there on the property and just poking around.
So he patrolled that fire ground for us that night.
Kept putting it out. Did my bit.
We had no one. Our support for most guys never made it on about 7 occasions.
So much firefighting in our community is being done by everyday civilians armed with hoses, fire pumps and bulk water carriers strapped to the back of their utes, the Mosquito Army. They are the unsung heroes, always there.
I'll go into the paddock where the fire is active. We all have 2 ways.
Yep.
And then the mosquitoes will get pulled back to the areas away from the fire, but we stop the spot fires. So we free up the big trucks. Big trucks come in. Big trucks meaning all our fire trucks.
Right.
And they come in and they just keep attacking, and all we do is just back them up, and it seems to work really well. Paul Blight's got the call, mate. We're just there.
Gee, and he's still out there. I hope he's been home and had some sleep.
You know, Gordon, only you would be able to tell him that, because I haven't got the guts to tell him to do anything at the moment. He says it, I just do it. It's that simple.
That's what everyone's doing, isn't it?
I've been involved in a lot of campaigns and a lot of different fires, and this is the worst one I've ever seen. The potential for this fire to jump up and grab you on the arse is absolutely huge. Your safety's got to be your first priority. We've got to all stay together. If your mate's in danger, grab him and pull him out and go with him. Don't try to be a hero. It's doing unprecedented things. It's jumping 4 and 5 and 10 kilometres in front of itself. Make sure you're always looking around. Watch your back at all times. And watch your mate at all times. We'll get through it.
Yo!
Sometimes we had up to 20-odd utes running around, and we had our own channel that we operated on. We achieved a lot because we weren't running to rules.
She's roaring through there.
The evil fingers of fire that keep reaching in any direction, impacting the same areas, be it house or road, over and over.
Down Northanger Road, spot fire.
How many times can a house owner leave their house thinking it may not be there next time they return?
Well, here we are. Bushfire 2019 Christmas. Merry fucking Christmas.
Multiple days, different directions, burning across what was already burnt. A fire comes through. The first time it burns everything, all the trees get scorched, the leaves all go brown and fall on the ground. And the fire comes back and burns all the leaves that fell on the ground. And there'll be little bits left, and the fire will come back and burn everything that it left behind the second or third time.
I can see the fire coming, and then trees between you and the house and just explode.
It'll just be instant spot fires. Boom. Everywhere.
Yeah.
Any organic matter, anything with carbon in it, burnt.
The pine tree was burning. We put the pine tree out. It's a big, tall pine tree. Beautiful, beautiful tree. So we spent, you know, half an hour squirting water 15 or 20 metres up into this pine tree to put it out. There's all this green grass around the bottom of the tree. We felt very happy with ourselves. The next time we went back there, the tree was burnt, the grass was burnt, everything was burnt. And then I sat there with big tears rolling down my face because I thought, oh, this is so fucking futile.
Organic matter is life, and it means that all life is burning. And just at a really fundamental level like that, it was just frightening.
I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning and I just lay there going, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this again. I can't get up. I can't go to the fire shed. I just can't. And I did tell Paul Bott about that, and he said, you did come to the fire shed, didn't you? And I went, yeah, I did, but I didn't think I could do it one more time.
Six times all up that it came through.
Came onto our land.
Whether it was from down south, west, sitting in pine stumps and rear its ugly head again. Yeah, an enemy just kept coming back and coming back and coming back and just kept trying to, you know.
Yeah, attack.
Yep.
What would you like to do, mate?
Did I count about six or seven there before?
Yeah, six of us.
Yeah, okay. So if you got three you want to peel off, mate, that's all right. We might actually get through this day without any more carnage, over.
Paul is getting very popular in the community. People keep telling me how they hear his name spoken with total respect as a leader. Pretty proud of him, actually. Can you tell?
One in a million. Really is.
He had an incredible foresight, my dad.
Makes me cry thinking about him. He's just a great bloke.
What could and what would and what did happen and what didn't because of the measures in place and the people that were there.
I'm now a part of the RFS, so he is my captain. Captain, my captain. It was his words and his inspiration, the sentiment that he put across right at the beginning, that set the stage for the entire scene to unfold.
Oh, it's just trying to protect the community, really. When it comes to it, it's dangerous stuff, but as long as you come back safe and we'll have a cup of tea or better and go out and do it again if you had to.
And the Mozzie crew?
They certainly saved us. Mongalo as a community, they certainly saved us on the Back Creek Road issue, on the Little River Road issue.
Forever grateful and forever in debt. That's how I feel to them.
They're something that's there to stay.
Like, yeah. Friends forever.
Bunch of ragtag rebels.
Yeah, I could rely on.
Little militia.
So grateful for that.
All of them, they did so well, yeah, you know. It's like, thank you.
Paul, everybody.
Yeah. They were all really brave to be a part of it.
I think knowing that there's this huge support group just waiting in amongst the trees of Mongalo, and when needed, people will come out from the trees. Just knowing that we live in this amazing community,
yeah,
makes it all worthwhile. Yeah.
People of Braidwood and the people of Mongalo stood up and said, we'll hold together and keep a little bit of a green island around what is a furnace right now. That's, I think, what I'll take away from it, is knowing the power of a disaster like this and its ability to actually galvanise people into action. And I think that's what we need in the world right now.
That's where change happens, grassroots.
Here I am, listening to the wind, having a whiskey. It's now the 11th of January, just past midnight, and it's raining. I'm trying not to cry thinking of the burnt bush and animals that have been killed. I'm acting very local in my little spot, you know, and taking care of it, and that's the best you can do.
Yeah, give them a big thanks, mate. Mighty effort from everybody, so
Yeah, thanks very much.
And the moon is red once again.
That was the fourth episode of an original podcast series, Heart of the Storm, proudly produced by Braidwood FM. Special thanks to Matt Thane for sharing his archival footage of the Mozzies, Meredith McKinney and Harper Collins for permission to include Judith Wright's poem, The Ancestors, and of course, the Mongalo community for so generously sharing their stories. Join us for the premiere of Episode 5, True Heart, 5 p.m. on Saturday, February 4th. This production would not have been possible without the generous support of the Braidwood Community Bank, Queanbeyan Palarang Regional Council, the Braidwood Community Help Fund, and Braidwood FM.